Episode 38 of the Energy Edge Podcast.
This is Camille Gallinger of Vitality Enterprises, and you're listening to the Energy Edge Podcast. As a certified nutritionist and vitality coach, I highly recommend the Energy Edge Podcast if you're serious about getting your energy edge on.
In any given year, about, a third of our country will have difficulty sleeping at night. If you look at just chronic insomnia, that's every night or almost every night. It's anywhere between 9 and 17% of our population have a very difficult time sleeping on a chronic basis. Now, these are huge numbers, and I hope this impresses you.
Welcome to the Energy Edge Podcast, where we believe if you desire to get the absolute most out of your work and life, then finding your energy edge is a must. The Energy Edge Podcast will help you learn to leverage your everyday major activities into an energy advantage so you can work and live at an optimal level. So let's begin.
Welcome to the Energy Edge Podcast, brought to you by 5MinuteEnergyKickstart.com. If you've not checked out this series before and you've heard of 5MinuteEnergyKickstart.com, I challenge you to do it today. 3 5-minute videos that highlight on sleep, nutrition, and fitness with a challenge and then an idea on how to give you an energy kickstart. You can go there today at 5MinuteEnergyKickstart.com. Well, I'm Brian Paul Buckley, and here we are on the even-numbered episode, which means, well, you guessed it, an interview. And this week, we have a special guest who is a sleep expert. His name is Dr. David Brown. He's the co-author of the book Sleeping Your Way to the Top and a world-renowned sleep expert. Now, I've got to make this disclaimer up front, and it's not that he's going to put you to sleep on the interview, but the recording on his end is a little difficult to hear many times. So I challenge you to know this going in and to really put that aside so that you can learn from Dr. Brown. He has so much rich information. I really don't want you to be distracted by the quality of the sound. I leverage his sleep expertise to talk about so many issues dealing with sleep in the specific areas that disrupt our sleep, specifically problems such as insomnia and sleep apnea. It's a fascinating episode, and you'll probably listen to it a few times just to get all the sleep tips, his research, and ways to improve this critical part of our lives. It's go time. Dr. David Brown is a sleep psychologist at the Children's Medical Center in Dallas, Texas, and has treated hundreds and hundreds of patients for a full range of sleep disorders over the past 2 decades. He's also an assistant professor of psychiatry at the University of Texas Southwestern Medical School in Dallas. He's one of an elite group of only 200 doctors who specializes in treating insomnia. It's a true honor to have Dr. Brown with us today. Well, Dr. Brown, it's an honor to have you on the Energy Edge Podcast. Thank you so much for your time.
I appreciate you asking me to join in.
Absolutely. And we ironically met as a result of interviewing you for the Successful Entrepreneur Online Conference last fall. And you were actually rated as one of the highest interviews. So first of all, kudos and thank you for that.
Thank you.
And so you're also author of Sleeping Your Way to the Top, which is one of my most referenced and referred books on sleep. And that's how we became guilty by association.
Glad to hear that, too.
So tell us about your current practice right now and how you help people in regards to sleep and sleep disorders.
Well, I'm actually a PhD in clinical psychology, but while I was still a graduate student, I got interested in sleep, and I've actually spent my entire career studying sleep. Most of my career I spent treating adults with sleep issues. More recently, I have started treating children at a children's hospital. It became obvious that the earlier you begin to deal with sleep problems, the better it is in the long run. So I now am focused on children, but I have a lot of experience with both children and adults. I generally work in sleep centers. We see the full gamut of sleep problems, running from sleep apnea, insomnia, daytime sleepiness, narcolepsy. There's over 70 diagnosable sleep disorders now.
I had no idea there were that many.
Yeah, some of them are trivial. Some of them are potentially life-threatening.
So Dr. Brown, you specialize obviously in sleep problems as a sleep psychologist. Do you see a lot of high achievers, high performers, very driven people come across your path?
Absolutely. You know, most people, when they think of sleep problems, are concerned with sleep apnea, and it is a big problem, and we should talk about that. But the most common sleep problem is not sleep apnea. It's actually difficulty sleeping. And, you know, there are a variety of reasons why people don't sleep well, but being a driven person, high stress levels can certainly lead to sleep problems in the long run and daytime problems down the road. So, yes, I definitely see that group of people.
So let's unpack that, because obviously the focus of this podcast is how we can have more energy leveraging things that we do every single day. And one of those is sleep. So the individual comes in, do they see the problems that they're having during the day affecting their and have a direct correlation with their problems sleeping at night?
You know, it depends on what the problem is. Meaning sleep apnea, it's more than likely the bed partner that's getting those people in because their snoring is bothering the bed partner's sleep. But it can be, certainly, that they're falling asleep during the day or they feel low energy, malaise, lethargia. You know, part of the point of our book, Sleeping Your Way to the Top, was there is a misconception that you can be both successful be both successful and get an adequate amount of sleep. That this idea is you need to be working constantly, give up your sleep to succeed. And our take in the book was that's absolutely not true. And in fact, just the opposite is true, that you will be more successful if you prioritize your sleep. You know, there was Charles Seisler at Harvard said that the three most important aspects of optimal human functioning are diet, exercise, and sleep. Now, that's actually been changed a little. Matthew Walker says that sleep is not just one of the pillars of optimal health. Rather, it is the basis of optimal health. You know, sleep affects everything we do. Attention, concentration, memory, mood, cognitive functioning. Your golf swing is influenced by sleep. Your health, your weight. Everything is influenced by sleep. And we are just now beginning to appreciate how fundamental sleep is for our overall well-being.
And so when somebody comes in who is struggling with sleep, what is the process you go through to help them to diagnose exactly what is going on or what type of disorder they're dealing with?
Okay, so typically it depends on what the presenting complaint is, but I spend a fair amount of time just discussing sleep and schedules. You know, sleep is probably more complicated than people realize, that they're are many things that look like sleep problems that may not be sleep problems. They may be timing problems. We can get into that if you're interested. But I'll link the interview, and I go through really not just sleep issues, but health and psychological issues to see if we can start to pinpoint what might be contributing to their sleep disturbance. Depending on that interview, we may or may not get a sleep study. Sleep studies can be very helpful, but in some cases, they don't really add much to the treatment. So sometimes we will just initiate treatment without even doing a sleep study.
Which is interesting. So let's say that you come across sleep insomnia, obviously, is a hot topic as far as sleep disorders, and you come across insomnia. What exactly is sleep insomnia, and what are some of your courses of action to correct it?
Okay, so the word insomnia is actually a misnomer. It literally means no sleep. Most people with an insomnia complaint are getting some sleep. It may not be as much as they want. It may take them too long to fall asleep. they may wake up and have a hard time getting to sleep, back to sleep, or it may even be that they sleep, but they just don't feel like they get a lot out of it. And keep in mind, the word insomnia is really just a complaint, very much like headache is a complaint. There are multiple causes of insomnias. And so part of the reason for the interview is to start trying to narrow down what might be contributing to their poor sleep quality. So there are, in any given year, about a third of our country will have difficulty sleeping at night. If you look at just chronic insomnia, that's every night or almost every night for 6 months or so. It's anywhere between 9% and 17% of our population have a very difficult time sleeping on a chronic basis. Now, these are huge numbers. I mean, I hope this impresses you.
Yes, yeah, and scares. Scares me. That's a lot.
And people kind of think, well, okay, I'm not sleeping. I have insomnia, and so there is a treatment for that. Well, not necessarily, meaning it depends on what's causing the sleep disturbance. And sometimes it's depression, anxiety. Stress is often a factor. You know, given enough stress, everybody will stop sleeping. Some people, it takes very little stress. Some people, it takes a great deal of stress. But the lifetime incidence of insomnia is 100%. That means that we all have a bad night every now and then.
Yeah.
Most of us, though, kind of go back into a good sleep fairly quickly. But there are a number of models about insomnia. And the one that I like best now is called the three Ps. There's predisposing factors, precipitating factors, and perpetuating factors. And what the first P means is it's not fair. Some people just don't sleep as well as others. Some people's hearts are not as good as others. Some people's liver's not as good as others. Well, that's true of sleep. But along comes some kind of stressor. And with the stressor, sleep worsens. You know, you're worried, you've got a health problem, something pushes you over into, now I'm having trouble sleeping. But as the stressor abates, sleep should return, and it doesn't always. And part of the reason that even if the stressor is gone, sleep may stay poor is because we develop bad habits and associations during the time that we are not sleeping well. For example, one bad habit is consuming alcohol. Many people believe that alcohol does help them fall asleep. And there is truth to that. Alcohol does help people fall asleep, and it's one of the few substances that will actually increase deep stage 3 sleep. However, that's only true with acute use. So it may help you fall asleep and deepen your sleep for one night or two nights. But even on that one or two nights, as the alcohol is metabolized, it starts to actively wake you up. And so it is not a good short-term and certainly not a good long-term solution. Interestingly, alcohol also selectively decreases muscle tone in the upper airway. And that's why some people only snore if they've had a drink or two. Some people who snore may only have sleep apnea when they've had some alcohol. So we try to take alcohol out of the equation. But another one, let me give you another example. People sort of intuitively say, I'm having a hard time sleeping, so I better go to bed earlier. With the idea, I'm not going to sleep well, but I need more time in bed to sleep. Well, that's about the worst thing that people can do, because there are factors that control sleep. There's a homeostatic sleep drive, and there are circadian rhythms. And a circadian rhythm means there's a time during the day that you're likely to sleep and a time that it becomes impossible to sleep. So when people extend their time in bed, they are probably going to put themselves into the, we call it a forbidden zone, a time during the 24-hour day that you just can't sleep. They are then going to start staring at the ceiling, and they're going to get frustrated, upset, angry, and it's going to go the opposite direction.
It probably exasperates the whole issue and the struggle that they're already having.
It absolutely does. Also, think about this for a minute. Spending too much time in bed is, again, one of the worst things that you can do. So let's say, for example, you would be happy as a clam to get 7 hours of sleep, but you're going to spend 10 hours in bed. Your body is not going to get those 10 hours of sleep. And so what's going to happen by spending that much time in bed is you might get 7 hours, but it's going to be fragmented. It's going to take you a long time to get to sleep. You're going to wake up in the middle of the night. And so we do things like delay bedtimes and restrict time in bed, primarily because we're manipulating both circadian rhythms and the homeostatic sleep drive. That may be beyond the scope of this conversation.
No, it's fascinating. Please keep going.
There is a good science on this. We have sleep is a homeostatic process. What that means is the longer you go without something, the stronger the drive to get it. A good example of a homeostatic process is appetite. If you go a long time without eating, you get hungry. As soon as you eat, you're not hungry anymore. Well, it turns out sleep is a similar process. Believe it or not, you can actually go longer without eating than you can without sleeping. But at some point in time, your brain is just going to shut you down. So hopefully we wake up in the morning with a very low homeostatic drive. But as the day progresses, the drive to sleep keeps getting stronger and stronger and stronger. Now, I know it doesn't feel like this at all, and I'm going to explain why. But well over 100 years ago, we could demonstrate if you take an animal, sleep deprive that animal, take a little of their cerebrospinal fluid out, inject it into a well-rested animal would fall asleep. It implies that something is building up in us that makes us sleepy. We still don't know exactly what it is, and it may be more than one thing, but the prime candidate now is a chemical called adenosine. Adenosine is the A of the ATP molecule, which is what we burn for energy. When you drink caffeine, you feel better because caffeine blocks adenosine receptors, so that chemical can't make you sleepy. So if that was the whole story, we wouldn't sleep like humans, we would sleep like cats. Meaning we would sleep a couple hours, be awake a couple of hours, all the way around the clock. But humans tend to stay awake around 16 hours and sleep roughly 8 hours. And it's the second factor, circadian rhythms, that allow us to do that. So a circadian rhythm is a biologic rhythm that occurs about every 24 hours. Interestingly, our clock does not run at exactly 24 hours. It runs typically at about 24.2 hours. So we have to reset our clocks every day. Now, we have a lot of circadian rhythms, but we have circadian alerting rhythms. And so when we are awake, the brain starts actively fighting to keep us awake. That starts out kind of wimpy in the morning, and there's a big dip in our functioning between 2 and 4 in the afternoon. That's the sleepiest time of the day. And in fact, some cultures are designed around this. It's what the siesta is.
And I love that about Europe.
Exactly. We sort of take the English model here, which is we kind of bully through that sleepy period and put a big dose of caffeine, you know, tea time right there to get us through.
Yeah.
But in the evening, these alerting rhythms get very, very strong. They get so strong to the point we call it the forbidden zone. That's where even if you haven't slept for a long time, it's very difficult to sleep when you're in the forbidden zone. You can see this very clearly in teenagers. If you have teenagers, you may notice that they're dragging all day, but they feel the best they've felt all day at about the time you would love for them to go to bed.
Of course.
9, 10 o'clock, they are fully alert at that point. So what they're feeling there is these circadian alerting rhythms. At some point in time, the brain shuts those rhythms off, and we think it's melatonin that does that. As you probably know, melatonin is secreted. It has to be night, and it has to be dark. Light will suppress melatonin, but we know where the clock in the brain resides. It's in a portion of the brain called the suprachiasmatic nucleus. If you just drip melatonin on a suprachiasmatic nucleus, it will stop firing. So we think it's the melatonin coming out at night that starts to shut these alerting rhythms off. We now have a big sleep drive, and we should be able to fall asleep. So that alone gives us two things we can manipulate. We can manipulate the homeostatic drive, and we can manipulate circadian rhythms. And that's why it's counterintuitive that often we delay bedtime, not put them to bed earlier, because we're trying to get them past the forbidden zone. We also limit their time in bed because, and the key word here is control. A controlled sleep deprivation will do several things. It will help people fall asleep more quickly, and it will decrease the number and duration of awakenings during the night. It also, again, increases stage 3 sleep, which is a very deep sleep stage. And so we start to squeeze sleep time down, and once people start sleeping again, then we begin to expand that sleep envelope. And it works quite well in many, many people.
We'll be right back with the remainder of this interview with Dr. Brown after this short break.
Hi, this is Megan Blacksmith of Zesty Ginger, and here is your nutritional energy boost that you could try today. Stay hydrated. Lack of appropriate intake of water is one of the main reasons we get tired throughout the day. A good gauge to start with and then adjust according to your needs is to try drinking half your body weight in ounces. So if you're a 150-pound person, you're going to aim for 75 ounces of water per day. If you're more active or if it's more humid, then you can add more. But once you start hydrating appropriately, your body's going to start to tell you what you need. Waters, broths, herbal teas all count, but guess what? That caffeine in your coffee, that soda, black tea, those are diuretic, meaning it does not count and you'll actually need more water to make up for it. As with food, it's even more important with water to make sure you have a clean, filtered source.
Most of us are just plain tired. Our pace far outruns our energy, yet we just keep going. We quickly move from busy to beat down to burnout. And sometimes we pull this off by the end of the same day. And it's only Monday. What we need is a reminder there's another way. A kickstart to get us thinking and get us going in the right direction. 5MinuteEnergyKickstart.com offers 3 5-minute videos on the topics of sleep, nutrition, and fitness movement, where a problem is discussed and 2 energy kickstart challenges are offered. Why? Because we all need a kickstart from time to time. The best part about it is the only thing it'll cost you is a few minutes of your time, because the video series is absolutely free. So check out 5MinuteEnergyKickstart.com today.
So for somebody, Dr. Brown, who is in a stressful situation, whether it's an isolated situation, whether they're going through a stressful time, or maybe they're just in a stressful season, what do you recommend for them to be able to not have this become really be almost a sleep problem or a sleep disorder over a long period of time? Is there something that they can do now to help aid them in their sleep?
And you know, when you're under stress, it's hard not to think about what the stressor is. For example, you probably haven't thought once about your car today, but if your car didn't start this morning and you're worried whether it's going to start when you go out there next, you probably think of little else. And so whatever is salient in our lives tends to stay in our mind. I tell people, though, all the time that there are reasons not to think at night. And let me tell you why. The way that our brain works at night is very, very different than the way it works during the day. The chemical milieu in our brain at night is totally different than the same than the chemical milieu during the day. So people have 16 hours where they can do nothing but worry if they choose to. Nighttime comes, and now the way that we process information changes. And it changes in a very specific manner. So, for example, if you look at a scary movie during the daytime hours, there's a portion of your brain called the amygdala that's going to get all fired up. Oh, I'm scared. But the amygdala is going to talk to your frontal cortex, and your cortex is going to say, these are just actors. This is all make-believe. Nobody has really gotten hurt. So you get a little tingle, but you don't go around screaming out of the room. It turns out that sleep is a very emotional time. Our amygdala is really working at night. Many people will tell me, and this in fact happens to me, I will wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning with an absolute catastrophe case. Worst problem I've ever had in my life. I see no solution. But I do know now that if I can make it till 10 o'clock in the morning, it's still a problem, but nowhere near the severity that it seemed at 3 o'clock in the morning.
And that's isn't that amazing how that works? I'm the same way at 3 o'clock in the morning. If I wake up, usually go to the bathroom, and whatever stressor pops back into my mind because I'm now awake, and how just magnified it is. That's exactly right. So how does somebody fall back asleep, and all of a sudden it seems larger than life in that moment?
Well, let me tell you why that's happening to begin with. It's because the amygdala is firing, so you have this emotional response. But interestingly, it's no longer talking to the frontal cortex. It's now talking to an older portion of the brain that says, you need to do something about this now. And so the point of that story is that the way we process information at night is much more emotional and much, much less logical and rational. And so I tell this to people because I'm basically giving you permission to let it go. That's the 16 hours that you have when your brain is very logical and rational, where you can actually think through a problem. At night, that same problem, you're just going to have an emotional response to. And you need to let it go. You need to use your active mind. You know, people that don't sleep well are thinkers. And that's a good thing. They have busy minds. They have active minds. And it serves them well almost everywhere in their life. The one place it does not serve them well is when they're trying to sleep. And by the way, you know, sleep, I said trying to sleep, we all do, but sleep is something that has to be allowed. You have to let it happen. Try is an arousing word. Try to lift the desk in front of you, and you're going to feel your muscles instantly tense up, just mentally. So if you go to bed and try to sleep, you've just lost the battle. You have to let it happen. And so trying to calm your mind. And I talk to people about using their very good and active mind to their benefit and not their detriment. And by that I mean, yes, you have an active mind. It's thinking. It's always trying to do something. Well, use your mind to go somewhere mentally. Go to the beach. But don't just see the beach. You want to feel the sand under your feet. You want to feel the heat of the sun. You want to feel the breeze through your hair. You want to hear the waves and seagulls. You want to smell salt in the air. And what you're doing there is you're using your very active mind in a positive manner, hoping to then allow sleep to overtake you. I can guarantee you, if you sit there and think, okay, I've got this report due tomorrow and I'm not sure I did it properly, that's totally counterproductive. Give yourself permission. I can sleep tonight. I can deal with this problem tomorrow morning.
And that's great advice, Dr. Brian, because it is one of those situations where it's where we allow our focus to go that either keeps us awake or wakes us up, or we can put it in something and put the active mind on that. And that's a great tip, too, to be kind of multisensory, allowing so many different sensors to really, really put us into that state of just relaxedness and change of focus, and what a difference that makes. So another question here, we have a number of listeners of ours who are business travelers, they're road warriors, and so they spend a good amount of time sleeping in a hotel. What recommendations for people who are struggling sleeping in a hotel? Let's say, for example, the first night coming into a hotel, what are some tips or suggestions that you would have for somebody who is struggling on the road sleeping in a hotel, especially that first night?
Okay, so one other point about natural sleep that people don't realize is that we all wake up during the night. Good sleepers awaken 5 to 11 times a night. But if you just lift your head, look around a dark room, put your head back down, you'll go right back to sleep, and that gets wiped out of memory. So you said, huh, didn't wake up once last night. But we all wake up at night. When you're in your own environment, the one you sleep in every night, everything is as it should be. So you go right back to sleep. But when you're traveling, now the sounds are different. The bed feels different. The smells are different. And every little awakening, normal awakening, you're going to think something's wrong. And it's going to tend to start to fragment your sleep. It's a difficult problem. I mean, we all have to travel at times. And there's something we have known about for many years with having sleep labs. It's called the first night effect. The first night that you spend in a new environment is typically the worst night because it's an unfamiliar environment and your body's going to have to kind of make sense of all the changes that are going on. But if you stay longer than a single night, your sleep should improve. But, you know, whatever you can do to keep your home environment, I would recommend. You probably can't travel with your own pillow, but if you could, that would help. I love white noise generators. Hotels should put white noise generators in every room. The way you make a place quiet is to add noise to it. If you work in an office and the air conditioning goes out, suddenly you can hear everything going on around you. But with the air conditioning running, that's a constant noise, and the brain will not attend to constant noise. It only attends to changes. And so by adding a constant sound to the environment, you cover up transient noises during the night. There is probably a tendency to consume alcohol when you travel as well. And I would limit that because I've already explained why that's going to ultimately disrupt your sleep, even if you don't use it normally at home. Stay in comfortable hotels if you can afford to. And noise certainly is an issue. And the mattress itself is an issue. So hotels that provide some sense of quiet and comfort will ultimately help your sleep. Now, this is all true if you're traveling in the same time zone. If you go to different time zones, there's a whole new set of problems. Because remember circadian rhythms. Humans can travel through space now more rapidly than our body can compensate. It's called jet lag. So if you go to Europe, you're going to be awake all night. You're going to sleep all day. But if you stay in Europe, it will eventually compensate. But it's a slow process. And so if you live in Dallas, let's say, and you fly to California, it's probably kind of hard to stay awake until your regular bedtime in California because you're much physiologically later. It's your home time. Going to Iceland, you're going to, if you normally go to bed at 11 o'clock, you try to go to bed at 11 o'clock in Iceland, that's way too early. So you're going to stare at the ceiling for hours. So we have ways of adjusting circadian rhythms just to pique your interest. We do it with a combination of melatonin and bright light. If you had a choice of one or the other, bright light turns out to be about 10 times more powerful than melatonin. So, for example, if you go to Europe, there's a tendency if you leave in the evening, arrive in the morning, you want to go to your hotel and just sleep. But you shouldn't do that. If you arrive in the morning, you should get outdoors as quickly as you can and spend as much of that first day outdoors, because that morning bright light is what's going to ultimately reset your clock.
And these are just wonderful tips for business travelers or when we're going on vacation or we're traveling long distances. So I greatly, greatly appreciate that. Are there any closing thoughts that you wanted to leave for us, Dr. Brown, as far as just in general on sleep or something we've just not touched on that you'd like to hit for us?
Well, I would encourage, we didn't really talk much about sleep apnea. I would encourage any listener that thinks they have a sleep problem to not hesitate to talk to their doctor about their sleep problems. You know, it's interesting. Most insomnia patients really don't even mention their sleep to their physician. And I'm not sure why that is, but I think they are concerned that they might get diagnosed as depressed or anxious, even though that is not the most common cause of these problems, or they're afraid that they're just going to be given a sleeping pill. Sleeping pills do work. They are very helpful under certain circumstances, but we have many non-pharmacologic, non-pill approaches to treating sleep problems. And rather than just suffer with poor sleep, find out if there's something that can be done about it. And the likelihood is there's a great deal that can be done about it. You know, the way we feel during the day is something we get accustomed to. I feel about the same today as I did yesterday, but I probably don't feel the same today as I did 5 years ago. So we sort of slowly adapt to not feeling great during the day. When you can go back to feeling good, alert, enthusiastic, motivated, it is dramatic. And that's where we want everybody to be heading.
Well, I love the direction you've taken this, Dr. Brown. I really, really appreciate it. And we could just go on for hours, but for the sake of time and you writing a new book, which I would love to just talk about for a moment, tell us about your new book, if you would.
Well, we're working on a corporate guide. You know, sleep and safety go hand in hand, and very few companies ever put the two together. They think, I mean, they barely even mention sleep as a possible contributing factor to safety issues, productivity issues. We talk about absenteeism at work, but there's also presenteeism at work, which is your employees may be showing up, but they're not getting very much done because they're dead tired. And so we're trying to put together a type of manual that might help people in a very quick, not a academic manner, but in a very quick and entertaining way, start to explain why sleep is important for you as a worker, but also for companies that have employees. So we're hoping to get that out fairly soon.
Excellent. Well, I look forward to it, and I just really, really greatly appreciate your time. Dr. Brown, how could people find out more about you and what you're up to?
That's a good question. I'm at Children's Hospital in Dallas now, but I don't see adults here. My co-author, Terry Crawley, do you have a contact for her by any chance?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We could definitely reference Terry Crawley. Obviously, the book, Sleeping Your Way to the Top, would be a great way to learn more about you. And I will definitely be hopefully the first, Dr. Brown, to make people aware of your new book that's coming out, how they can gain access to that, and any other promotion that we can do. I would be happy to do that for you.
Fantastic. And I appreciate your willingness to let me get on and babble about sleep.
Absolutely. Well, it's worth it. Babble is just the thoughts and the concepts and the ideas that you have are just it's a great re-listen to. So I want to thank you in advance for your time.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thank you for making it to this point in our podcast. I hope you're encouraged, even inspired by Dr. David Brown today, and hopefully you learned a ton about sleep that you could actually apply tonight. Well, as always, you guessed it, we're going to try and do better next time. Go and get your energy edge on today through better sleep.